to talk to you today about unleavened bread. Let's take a little, turn to Matthew chapter 16, verse 6. Many times in the Bible, leavening is referred to as sin. This is one of them. Matthew 16, 6 says, "Take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." Have you ever thought to yourself and wondered about what that leavening is that he was specifically talking about? Now, I'm sure they had many doctrines, but I mean, the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. What was their greatest sin?
Hypocrisy.
You got to think about this for a minute. Now, I know there's arguments about, you know, were they from the right house, or was it really Aaron's sons, and the political offices was bought and sold for high priest, but basically they were still Levites. They were serving in God's house. It was at the right place, on the right day, at the right time. They had the right book, they had the scrolls, they had the scriptures. Wrong heart. Verse 7 says, "And they reasoned among themselves, it is because we have taken no bread." So it's like, what's he talking about leavening for? Because we don't have any bread? Verse 8, "But Jesus, being aware of it, said to them, O you of little faith, why do you reason among yourselves because you have brought no bread? Do you not yet understand or remember the 5 loaves of the 5,000 and how many baskets you took up? Nor the 7 loaves of the 4,000 and how many large baskets you took up? How is it you do not understand that I did not speak to you concerning bread, but beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." You know, we've got the same kind of problems today that they had then. We've got people thinking that this is a family business, a business, ministries. We've got people thinking that this is little fiefdoms and kingdoms. We've got people thinking about how they're going to steal people from another group, or going to attract people from one group to the other group, claiming that they're the, you know, the end time, whatever, the, yeah, that's an extreme. It's business as usual today in the world. I wonder which ones Jesus would say, beware of the leaven of the whatever church of God. Because if the motivation is to go to church to be seen, let everybody know that you're there, and see who's not there. It's sort of like, there was a cartoon I had one time, I've lost it over the years, but it was a lady on the telephone, and she's talking to somebody else, and it's on the caption, it says something, "Oh, really? And what did?" And they said, "What? And they did what?" And her husband comes around the corner and he says, "What are you doing?" She says, "I'm just getting the information so we can pray for them." Some people go because they like to see what's going on and keeping up on the gossip and make sure that everybody's there, and it makes them feel good, it makes them feel righteous. Other people go to church because, you know, when I started, for a while I sold insurance, everything except for health, property, casualty, life. And they said, oh, go to church and sell it at church. I said, well, that's a problem, you know. I mean, they don't really try to make merchandise at church, and they go to a small church and say, well, maybe you want to go to a bigger church. You know, if you're a contractor or insurance salesman or something, you go to the big fancy church where there's a lot of money, and then you can, it's good business. Ulterior motives. But what about leavening? There's, what I'm trying to tell is there's more than one type of leaven here. We've put out physical leavening. Hopefully we got it all, but guess what? We probably missed something. You probably, when you get home, if it's not here somewhere, like in your car or whatever, when you get home, you'll find it. If not this year, you'll find it. It's been there for 2 or 3 years. But there's physical leavening that we work on. And that's the easiest one. And then there's the spiritual leaven. Because these guys he's talking about, you know, they make a big to-do about putting the leavening out of their house. In fact, and the tradition is quite old, but I've seen today, or I mean in modern times either, even when the Jewish father, he'll go around the house and they specifically leave somebody. He's got a little feather. And they'll take the feather and they'll catch the chametz, the leavening, and, ah, what is this we found here? And then they put it in a bag and they take it outside and burn it and make a big to-do about all of the leavening. And you know, it's good for the kids, I guess. The kids like it. But here's one. Let me tell you of a practice. First year I took Hebrew classes, it was in the fall. No, I mean, well, it couldn't have been the fall. It had to be in the spring because this was going on. I didn't know that people did this. Down at the synagogue, and I hear him talking about what's going on. When it comes to the days of unleavened bread, if you're Jewish, at least, you know, it's a common practice in Nashville. I would think you're not the only ones that do this. If you've got a Gentile neighbor, you can sell him your leavening for a dollar. And then after the days of unleavened bread, you buy it back for $2. And the synagogue arranges the sales, too. If you can't find one to do it with, they have people that volunteer to do this, and the synagogue pays them, and, you know, you sell them your leavening, and now it's not yours. And then you can buy it back, you know, and technically, you've got rid of it, and it only costs you $1. I thought, you know, okay, physically, the letter of the law, yeah, that would meet that criteria, but you talk about blowing it, I don't think that counts. You know, it's like, what's the intent of your heart? You didn't want to get rid of this leavening, you didn't want to do this. You know, you're going to put it out, but you want to make sure you get it right back. See what you can do with the letter of the law, and that's what describes in the Pharisee. That's the type of leavening. Let me tell you another time, I got a friend of mine, his name is Ross. Some of you have heard me talk about him before, and I know in Knoxville I've talked about this, but we were at a conference in Athens, Tennessee one time, and they brought in a bunch of rabbis from Israel, and they had this one guy from Long Island. Well, how do you say it? Long Island? He had a yeshiva in Rockaway, New York. His name was Israel Chait. And he went on, he had this talk he was giving about the ignorance of some uneducated people that were unschooled and untrained in the law. They were too ignorant to understand the technicalities of Corban. And for 45 minutes he went on and he talked about how Corbin worked and, you know, went through his big long thing. And then afterwards he took questions. And my friend Ross was the first one to raise his hand. And he said, yes, can I help you? And he said, well, maybe this uneducated, ignorant, untrained in the law person that you're thinking of fully understood the technicalities and exactly the details and understood the oral traditions and everything else behind it, but they just had come to the conclusion that it was a bunch of BS. But he didn't say BS, he said it. And I thought, cool. And he shut it down, the whole talk, and that was it. Nobody else wanted to raise their hand and ask questions after that. But what I'm getting at is you can get so technical, and you can reason, and you can squirm, and you can look and says, it says for 7 days thou shalt not eat leavened bread. It says that you have to remove all the leavening in your life, in your house. I know what we'll do. We'll take it and we'll go sell it to the Gentiles for a buck and buy it back for two. They're happy. We're happy. It doesn't cost us money. And you miss the whole boat. How many people do things like that with their life? Reasoning out a way around things. And technically it flies. But isn't that why Jesus said, you've heard it said, thou shalt not kill. But I say to you, he who hates his brother in his heart is already guilty of murder. See, it's the intent. That's the whole sermon that he gave that day. That was the whole gist of it. It wasn't the letter of the law. It wasn't the technicalities, the fine points of it. It was what is in your heart. So what are we supposed to get out of the days of unleavened bread? How is it still? If talking about the leavening of the scribes and the Pharisees was supposed to teach the disciples something, what is it that we're supposed to get out of putting out the leavening in our life for 7 days? How are we, what are we supposed to learn? Is it just how to go through this ritual and find the little crumbs of bread and then bring in unleavened bread and matzos? And I mean, Mary had earlier, she had some chocolate-covered matzos, and they're okay. But I'll tell you what, I really rather, you know, a nice, fresh loaf of bread straight out of the oven and all that. It tastes better, if we're going to be honest, than the flat bread, the leavened bread. Is it like just deprive yourself of something for a week? You know, don't the Catholics do that stuff? They give things up for Lent? You know, they hide it somewhere. Where is that? They hide the Lent or something. You don't have fish on Friday, or you have fish on Friday and not meat, and you give chocolate up for 40 days or something. And then you get to go down and celebrate Fat Tuesday because you gave up chocolate for 40 days. I don't know. Maybe that's what we're supposed to learn from it. Is there something deeper that's going on? Something deeper that God wants to reach us. In Exodus 13:6 it says, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Lord. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days, and no leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. And you shall tell your son in that day, saying, this is done because of what the Lord did for me when I came up from Egypt. So, not only do you not eat leavened bread, we're commanded every day to eat unleavened bread. Every day you've got to make sure that you eat some unleavened bread. Verse 9 is what makes this command so special. It shall, in Exodus 13, it shall be a sign to you on your hand and as a memorial between your eyes, that the Lord's law may be in your mouth, for with a strong hand the Lord has brought you out of Egypt. You shall therefore keep this ordinance in the season from year to year. So the observance of God's law, the celebration of the Sabbath, serves as a sign. And I'll tell you something, if you don't have leavening in your house and you abstain from it and you keep this for 7 days, it's a sign. People think you're weird. It makes you different. It stands out. It's a mark, a symbol, a sign of whatever. Important things happen on God's holy days. Let's take a look at that. Turn to Genesis chapter 19, starting in verse 1. Here's something that happened during this time of year. It says, now two angels came to Sodom in the evening. And Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. And he said, "Hear now, my lords, please turn in to your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet. Then you may rise early and go on your way." And they said, "No, but we will spend the night in the open square." But he insisted strongly, and they turned in to him and entered his house, and he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. It's in there for reasons to tell us of those days of unleavened bread. That night, the men of the city, we know the story, they came to Lot's house and demanded that the angels come out so that they could violate God's commands with them. Lot offers them his daughters. They say, "No, send us the angels." But look what happens during this time, this year. Verse, the year that this is happening, Genesis 19:12. Then the men said to Lot, "Have you anyone else here, son-in-law, your sons, your daughters, and whomever you have in the city? Take them out of this place, for we will destroy this place because the outcry against them has grown great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it." So Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law who had married his daughters and said, "Get up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city." But to his sons-in-law, he seemed to be joking. When the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, "Arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of this city." And while he lingered, the men took hold of his hand, his wife's hand, and the hands of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful to them, and he brought him out and set him outside the city. So it came to pass when they had brought them outside that he said, "Escape for your life. Do not look behind you or stay anywhere else in the plain. Escape to the mountains lest you be destroyed." Here's the lesson about turning around and looking back. A lot of people want to look back. They want to give up a sinful life. Genesis 19:24 says, "Then the Lord rained brimstone and fire on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of the heavens." I find it hard, I just got to divulge, I won't want to take too long of a rabbit trail here. But in Hebrew and English, both are still very clear. Those that want to tell you that, there's another, and if I step on somebody's toes, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be offensive, but there's a heresy going around, this one God heresy. It's going around the churches of God. Say, there's one God, it's God in the Old Testament and Jesus in the New Testament, and it's just another version of it's like the Pentecostal oneness. They view that as a trinity. Three is one, or one is three, instead of three and three. One is three. But, these guys know, Trinity won't fly, so we'll call it one God. Let's go back and read this again. Genesis 19:24. "Then Yahweh rained brimstone and fire on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Yahweh out of the heavens." So one Yahweh on earth calling down fire from another in heaven. There's lots more where that came from. Verse 25, "So he overthrew these cities, all the plain, all the inhabitants of the cities, and grew on the ground." And what grew on the ground? "But his wife looked back behind him, and she became a pillar of salt." It's like looking back at sin. I know you probably heard whole sermons about don't look back, but basically, we need to leave our life of sin. You don't look back longingly like, that was so fun when we did that before we were converted or whatever. Why? Because it's what's in your heart. It goes back to Jesus for the sermon. So if it's in your heart, you've already done it. If you look back longingly and remember the times and things that were so fun, you're doing it again, over and over and over again. Except there's a difference. Back then, you were a heathen, you were unconverted. It was, okay, you repent. Now we're supposed to be converted. Sort of like the guy that goes out and cheats on his wife, and then he gets sorry, it's Friday, he doesn't come home till Saturday, he comes home broke, he spent all his money on other women. She gets very upset, he cries, he begs for forgiveness, she forgives him, and then next Friday, he goes out and does it again, as soon as he gets his check again. And he comes back and he's really sorry. Now, she says, all right, one more time, you're not going to do this to me again. She forgives him, takes him back, and then Thursday night he starts making plans for tomorrow. I'll just cry and forgive. We can't do that with God. We're going to fail, and we can fail even multiple times, but when we start thinking, we'll just do this and then we'll repent and we'll be over with, that's not repentance. Let's take 1 Corinthians, look at that. 1 Corinthians 5:6. Why is it so important to abstain from leavening? Why can't you let a little bit in? I didn't hear that.
Leaven's the whole lump.
Yep. When Mike and Brenda and Mary and I and my mom, we were driving around picking up the food, we were talking, and somebody had told Mike, says, when you stop coming to church on the Sabbath, the longer you don't do it, the easier it is not to do it. And that's what it's like with anything that goes against what God says. The more you do something you're not supposed to, the longer you do something, and then you can start reasoning in your head for reasons why it might be okay, justification. When somebody goes to steal something, a lot of times people will reason in their head, like if they're going to steal from their employer, they don't pay me what I'm worth in the first place. And everybody else is a crook around here. My boss is a crook. And that's just part of the thing. They expect this. It's a cost of doing business. So they're just going to write this off. And people talk themselves into justifying it, and then finally they go out and they steal. The ones that do this type of thing. Very few people just say, oh, cool, I'm going to go wake up and I'm going to steal today. There's this self-justification process people go through. Well, they'll never miss it. They have so much, whatever it is that they think about. And that's the way it is with sin. A lot of times we just think about it and we justify it. And, maybe even there's a Bible verse that you can kind of twist. A lot of people do that. You can make the Bible say almost anything you want it to say if you try hard enough. Now you might be stretching and taking out of context, but just about anything you can find. If you don't believe me, look at all of the religions out there. Even all the Christian religions out there, they're supposed to be based off of the Bible. Most things they're doing are based off of something in the Bible somewhere. They got some basis for doing it. It might be way out of context, it might be off in left field, but they got a reason for it, if you ask. We can do that ourselves if we really try and stretch it hard enough. But 1 Corinthians 5:6, part way into it, it says, do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Therefore purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. For indeed Christ our Passover was sacrificed for us. Therefore let us keep the feast not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Well, first of all, you know, people had to be keeping these of them read to understand this, but the main part I want to get out of this, or that I did, what this hits me with, is that we got to get rid of the old leaven in our lives. We all have it. You can't help but not have it. You are a product of your environment. What you grow up with, what your customs were, what your family was like, what your religion was, what you, you know. Anybody that doesn't think so, take you through a little exercise. It's very short. One verse. Show you how much we all have this baggage that we bring with us. Starts out in Genesis. Problem is, I got way too many things before Genesis in my Bible. Alright. Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Okay, here's all of our baggage. We got people that are here or going to be here or whatever that can't agree on when the beginning was. Is there a gap between Genesis 1 and Genesis 2? Is creation 6,000 years ago? How do we jive things? Is it whatever? Preconceived ideas, baggage, no matter what it's from. And also God. Now, we've already decided before we even read the book when the beginning was, who God is, what's he like, you know, where is he? God, that's like the top guy or whatever. He's up in heaven. He's on the throne. It's that harsh, stern guy that made all of these rules and regulations that nobody could keep, and finally his son came and freed us from all of that stuff. You know, baby in a manger and all of that stuff that goes with it. We can't get past the first verse without our baggage basically ruining it for us. Instead of reading it, it's impossible to do it, but really you need to read it without the baggage, kind of like shut all of that off and be thinking, what is this beginning? Who is this God? Because here he is, he's introducing himself to us. Frank, if I come over to your house, and I really want to get to know who you are. I want to know everything about, I want to know what kind of a person you are. I want to know where you grew up, your environment, where you went to school, the things you did, your hobbies, I'm going to have to start at the beginning. I'm going to start with, okay, Frank, where were you born? You know, you were a baby. Where was this baby? And who, you're going to start telling me things. You're going to say, well, okay, I was born in such and such a year in such and such a city. And my mom's name was this, and my dad's name was this, and I had this many brothers and this many sisters, and here's what my parents did for a living, and here's what my dad's parents did, and here's what my grandparents did. And you're going to, you know, if I really am interested in you, I'm going to have you go back as far back as you know. Trace out your history. And then if I want to know more about you, you might even pull some pictures out. Isn't this fun? You go over to somebody's house and it's really exciting when they, you know, if they ever pull out the family albums and they say, well, yeah, I want to show you my family. You know, a lot of times people say, oh, it's getting kind of late, but it's only 6 o'clock. Well, I got to early start tomorrow morning. But you are. You're going to pull this out. You're going to show. You're going to give me details. And this is what God's doing. He's introducing us to him. He took some dirt, and his son gathered it together and blew in it and created human beings. It tells us what they did with the animals and naming them and what was created what, and then he gets down to he's working with a family, and he takes us through this family. It starts with Adam and Eve, but he certain branches of the family, he takes us from the beginning to the end, and he tells us everything about them. And if we'd only listen to the story and let God explain to us when the beginning was, let God has explained to us who he is, let God, you know, without the baggage, but it's, like I said, literally it's impossible because we're going to drag our baggage into it. But we'd be better off, the more we can do it like that, the better off we are. Guys, it's, you know, he's offering us a chance to be in his family. That's really all it amounts to. It's like, you know, there's still some openings. There's still some room. And one of the things he tells us to do is this crazy stuff like we're here right now. It's a sign between God and his people to put the leavening out for the 7 days. In Exodus 12:15, you know, put the leaven out. Put it. That's why it's used as sin. Sin, we talked about it the other night. Sin is invisible. Leavening is invisible. You can't see it, but it's everywhere. It's in the air. You got leavening yeast spores everywhere. So 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the first day you shall remove the leaven from your houses. Here's something kind of important. For whoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. I remember 1 year Mary and I were, Vernon, who I told you about earlier, he was still a minister, and we were doing really good, and it was the days of unleavened bread, and we thought, man, we had this thing licked. I think it might have even been the first year we observed it. And it was the third or fourth day of unleavened bread, and we're talking about it, and we had gone somewhere, and about half, that's when we still were violating Leviticus 3, and about halfway through our fat burgers from McDonald's, with our mouths full, we both stopped about the same time and went, uh-oh. You know, we thought we were doing so good, and we're talking about the days of unleavened bread, eating hamburgers or cheeseburgers from McDonald's. It's like, oh boy, we're stupid. But it's, you know, did he forgive that one? Yeah, I mean, that was guilt. That was like, whoa. You know, spit out what you had in your mouth. You didn't want to swallow it. And the rest, it was too late already. But it's so important that whoever eats leavened bread from the first day to the seventh day, that person's cut off. It's like, you're out of here. It sounds kind of harsh. Or maybe it's not so harsh. Maybe we need to understand how important it is. What's the exercise about? We better get something out of it. Verse 16. On the first day there shall be a holy convocation. On the seventh day there shall be a holy convocation from you. No manner of work shall be done on them, but that which everyone must eat, that only may be prepared by you. So you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread, for on this same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening. For 7 days no leaven shall be found in your houses. Since whoever eats what is leavened, that same person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he is a stranger or a native of the land. You shall eat nothing leavened in all your dwellings. You shall eat unleavened bread. Now, everything in the feast teaches that Jesus is the Messiah. He went through even the matzah, the stripes, the piercings, the holes. Our Messiah had no sin in his life. He truly was the unleavened bread. And he is the unleavened bread that we need to enjoy. We need to be putting as much of him into us as we can. That's another thing this week is about. You forget work. You can forget bills, problems, family, headaches, you know, whatever's a pain in your rear, put it out. Forget it. Like my little granddaughter Emily says, forget about it. Just don't worry about it. It's another reason why it's so important to keep it. Jesus didn't go to Jerusalem and say, okay, I'm going to take off the first day, I'm going to take off the seventh day, and I'm going to raise some extra cash on the in-between days. I'll pick up some side jobs. You know, tomorrow is just as much of a feast of unleavened bread as today. Now, today is a high day. We're not supposed to do any work other than for what we eat, no work of any kind. But it's still the days of unleavened bread, just like it's the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days, and then on the eighth day you have a high day. As much of Jesus as we can put under our lives, that's what we're supposed to do. One of Satan's greatest triumphs is to keep people in ignorance of this festival. Read in the paper last night, 12,000 pagan eggs they're going to stuff Saturday and have out in the... I'm glad we got the group camp all done ourselves. I'm thinking, kind of halfway thinking of not locking the gate, but just pulling it across. And then if somebody's got to come or go, just know it's not going to be locked. You might have to jump out of your car. We're going to have, or maybe it's, you know, we'll just put up a sign. No pagan eggs, or bunnies don't lay eggs. To learn more about the truth, come up to the lodge, you know, or welcome them. I don't know what we'll do, but they'll be all over. You know, they'll be descending from all over to find these pagan eggs. Because there's going to be prizes, like a bicycle, a slip worth a bicycle, or different prizes. And so they're going to be everywhere. And Satan, out of those 12,000 eggs that are hidden and found, I bet you it's probably very safe to say that not some of them will have Bible verses and some will have other things, but probably not one verse about unleavened bread and Passover and putting the leavening out of your life and the things that we're going through this week and learning and putting Christ in and taking the leavening out. Won't be there. You know, there's a future Passover. I think, this is speculation 101, I think that maybe, possibly, kind of could be, way out there, it just might happen. Maybe the plagues start on Passover. Maybe the tribulation starts on Passover. I don't know. We'll see. I think we'll live to see it. I think it's not that far away. But one thing is for sure, it is extremely important for us to observe this time, because he says whoever doesn't observe it is cut off. It's more than just running around through your cupboards and looking for things that say autolyzed yeast for flavoring versus Fleischmann's yeast for, you know, and which do we go by, which way is baking soda, bicarbonate soda, leavening, should we get rid of that? What about eggs? If we whip the eggs up, that makes it fluffy and traps air. Can we, you know, all those things, I'm not saying we don't look or do any of that. I'm just saying that's not what you go through putting the leavening out. That's not really what the whole thing is all about. The whole thing is really about putting the sin out of our life. It teaches us what our Savior did for us. And it teaches us that we're supposed to imitate Him. To live like He lived. Like the little bracelets that were popular a few years ago, WWJD, what would Jesus do? So what would He do? The next time somebody does something that's not so good to us, what would He do? The next time somebody cuts you off in the road, what would He do? The next time we have a chance to do something good or kind or helpful for somebody else, What would he do? That's what we need to come away with this week. And put the physical leavening out of our house, yes. But also at the same time, beware of the leavening of the scribes and Pharisees of the modern churches of God. Thank you, Mark. You know, I've heard of people putting their bread and leavening in a little bag and tying it on a string on a pole and putting it over their back fence and then pulling it back in after 7 days are over. I don't know what you think, these are gold coins or something. We're going to pick out a song here. Be patient.
Sixty-five.
We got.